Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Roger North, and this is True North. Today, I have a special guest, Ole Damgaard. I've been on the show before, but there's always new things to talk about. There's been, of course, a whole spate of either dodgy celebrity deaths or apparently terrorist incidents. And I'd like to find out what's going on from Ole, because he's really the expert on this area. Ole, are you there? Ole, are you there? Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties, but basically what's going on, for example, of course, we had the Berlin truck attack. And of course, you know, the problem was not the Berlin truck. It was not the truck, but it was the people driving the truck. We've also had, you know, we've had a number of recent things, like, for example, the shooting at the Florida airport, where the guy apparently came over from, he flew in from Alaska. And there was a piece of legislation, for example, in the Alaska, in the Florida legislature. So it's just very weird. We've been having a lot of these things, and you know, once again, there's a push for gun control, and there's certain patterns. I invite you to go to Ole's website, lightonconspiracies.com. That's light on conspiracies, one word, LIGHT, you know, on conspiracies. .com, where he breaks down a lot of what's happened with a number of these conspiracies. Ole, are you there? Are you there? Okay, we seem to be having some problems. He's listed being on the line, but I'm not quite sure what's happening because I'm not able to hear him. So we're trying to figure this one out. But you know, but just to kind of give you a background, okay, we've had, you know, especially going up to the Trump inauguration, I suspect we have a lot more false flags in the next couple of days, because obviously the Democratic Party is not really interested in giving up power. So, so what's happening right now is we've had all these. Okay, oh, it looks like he's back on. Ole?
I'm here, but can you not hear me?
I couldn't hear you before. Like for 10 minutes, I got on the line a little bit after you did, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, he got a bite to eat or he had to go do something, and then, you know, and then when the show started. Anyways, we don't need to go into all that now, but I can hear you now. That's what counts, and what counts is the information.
Of course, I've been on standby for like 10, 15 minutes, so of course I'm here.
Good. Yeah, well, I saw that. And then I kept on, I don't know if you could hear me, but I couldn't hear anything from you. And I thought, well, maybe he stepped away from his phone for a second. Anyways, Ole, it's good to have you back. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, but extremely busy because, as you've seen since before Christmas, it's just been nonstop here with these type of operations.
Yeah, I know that. And quite frankly, I suspect there's going to be a lot more of it leading up to the Trump inauguration. You know, especially in the U.S., but yeah, where do you want to even start? I mean, to be honest, I don't know quite where to start. What really stands out in your mind right now?
The thing is that, first of all, I just want to say for anyone listening, I would like to make point out that there, when NATO have their exercises, often there are like 14, 15 countries involved, including the U.S. and so on. And so when we look at these things that have happened in Europe and in the U.S., please keep that in mind when you see this as sounding maybe a bit crazy. But then once you start seeing how the dots are connected and how these operation might be coordinated, then this might open up a new road. And this is exactly what I'm suggesting, that what we're looking at, more or less all of these attacks and mass shootings and so-called alleged terror attacks in Europe and other places are coordinated. They're coordinated after what is called the Strategy of Tension, a CIA Mossad operation, and also Operation Chaos. Both of them based on how to inflict fear into modern society so that we will just bend over and accept more and more control, surveillance, giving up all our rights and paying for totally unjust wars and so on, based on these claimed terror attacks. But once one after the other, it just comes up again and again and again, how these are staged events. And I would strongly suggest that this is what we are looking at now here as well. I would just like to say it's very important not to jump to any conclusions. And I always try to not say anything until I really know what I'm talking about. I also try to, as fast as possible, go on location, where I've been to many of the locations here in Europe where these claimed attacks have happened. Trying not to prove my theory, but to find out what really happened, you know, where, what actually happened, what is the evidence showing, where are the witnesses, where are the alleged victims, where were they buried, are they buried, where are the families, are there any families, where are the death certificate, where are the birth certificate, and so on. And I tell you, the last few years, I've come up empty every single time. It's like, where are they? And this is why I feel very strongly about.
I want to go over that. That's a huge point. So you, for example, like we have that. Let me just pull one out, like that attack in Paris, where I guess Eagles of Death Metal were performing, if I recall right. And
yeah, at the Bataclan.
Weren't there a bunch of people killed in that?
Claimed death, and this is what is so difficult because sometimes these operations are with real victims, sometimes it's only crisis actors, and sometimes it's a combination of real victims and a lot of crisis actors, where the crisis actors are used with makeup and all of these things to get to make sure that the impact in media is as strong as possible, because that is what they're looking for. It's based on this old Roman template: problem, reaction, solution. The few in power secretly create a problem, a terror attack, whatever, to get the emotional reaction from us, which is always, oh my God, we need protection. And then they, the one who created the problem, will serve us the solution. And every single time it's the same solution. Give up your weapons, give up your freedoms, give up your liberty, pay to get total control in every part of your life. And I would like to point out also that there was a lot of attacks before the election, the U.S. election. Then when we came up to when big showdown was going on, there was absolutely nothing. Then on the exact date, on December 19, on the hour more or less, when Trump wins as president or was officially sealed as the next president, more or less on that exact hour, we had three different attacks here in Europe. We had the Berlin claimed truck attack, a copy of the Nice attack, which was a false flag, big time. We had a mass shooting in a mosque in Zurich in Switzerland, claimed one. And we also had the Russian ambassador assassinated or allegedly assassinated in Ankara in Turkey, exactly on the hour when when Trump was sealed as president. So my question is, what are the chances? What are the chances of all of this just being a coincidence? Or is this part of a bigger game, a bigger global game of chess, according to the New World Order?
Very well could be. Let's start with one. Have you had time to investigate the Berlin truck attack? And I don't like calling it that because the truck had nothing to do with it. You know, it because I saw the headlines in right near where I live in local paper said that about this truck caused all this mayhem. No, it wasn't the truck. It was the person driving the truck.
Yeah, but I've been nonstop on these, checking all of these events out 24/7 here since they happened. So I know very much about this claimed attack in Berlin. And it's like when you look at the evidence, you will see that this was not what we're being told. The official story is that there was a truck, there was a Christmas market in central Berlin. And on the 19th of December, just a few days before Christmas, a truck was hijacked, a big Scania truck was hijacked. It was a Polish truck, and there was this Tunisian guy who killed the driver, they said, shot him, and then drove around in Berlin with the driver's dead body in the passenger seat. And then when he came to this Christmas market, he just rammed the truck right in there, and killed 12 people and injured some 50 individuals in this Christmas market. And then only after 100 yards or something, he made a very powerful left turn and came to a standstill. And this is where all these photos are, right in the front of a very, very historical, important symbol, the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church, which is a super important symbol for Berlin. But the thing is, this can well happen. I mean, it is possible. So it's very important to look at the evidence. And the thing is, when you look at where it's claimed that the truck went in and then inside the Christmas market and then out killing all of these people, there is absolutely no way you can maneuver the truck in there. I mean, we're talking about like 90 degrees turns and stuff like where there's no skid marks, no damage to these huts in the Christmas market. There's all of these people claimed to be dead. But we have a German journalist who was on location some 90 seconds after it happened. And he walks up and down filming. As usual, the filming is very blurred, you don't see any faces. The camera is mostly turned downwards. And 90 seconds after this happened, you can see the camera pans over the church tower. So you can see what time it is. And then if you count backwards, you will see that he started filming some 90 seconds after the claim it started at 8:02. And there, where all of these people are said to have been injured and killed, there are only three visible victims, and they're sitting up being taken care of by people next to them and so on, meaning that there should be at least 50 people underneath the truck massacred, because we're talking 50 people injured, 12 people dead, and we're seeing only three people that are being comforted. There's no screaming. There's no blood. There is something that looks like blood, but that is Glühwein, you know, this mulled wine. That is served for Christmas. And so also one thing that is very, very important is that along this whole stretch, there are these anti-parking like metal poles, very heavy duty type of things that are put 6 feet in between or less than 6 feet in between the whole stretch where this Christmas market is. And here the truck is said to have just gone in, killed all of these people and then out again, right across one of these things. But when you look at the photo, the photos, I've checked hundreds and hundreds of photos on this whole event, and there's one of these right behind the truck, not damaged in any way, meaning that the only way the truck could have come to this position is by reversing into this position, because otherwise that metal pole would have been knocked over. There would have been massive damage to the front of the truck because these are heavy duty things. And there's nothing.
Yeah. One thing I think it's very important is that you look at, you're always looking at the basics, the fundamental. Is there the room for the truck to maneuver around? How did it get in? Because when you've got those areas, because like with farmers markets or something like that, because I go to farmers markets, they often, you can't just drive in the middle of it. They've got all kinds of protection around it because obviously, you know, it's basically civilian areas. Similarly, when they block off a street, or a group of streets for, you know, like a parade or something like that, they, you know, they set it up so that you can't get in there. And so you're just basically looking at the physical evidence and saying, what does the basics say? What do the fundamentals say? Is this even possible? I mean, that's really where you're starting your investigation from, isn't it?
It's totally like that. I always go look upon these places with Farmer Brown logic, what I call Farmer Brown logic. 1 + 1 = 2. And anything else, if somebody just because they're a professor or somebody with a long title, if they claim 1 + 1 = 34, I know they're lying and they're trying to mess with my brain. And here we just look at the evidence, just at the evidence, nothing else. Another thing is, you know, where the truck is said to have gone in, killed all of these people and then come to a standstill. There were lots of strings with lights hanging above it, and it's still there. You can see this footage of where right afterwards this journalist is running around, or not running, he's walking around very calmly filming this whole thing. The lights are still there, and the height of these strings of lights is less than the height of the truck. So had the truck passed here, it would have just pulled the whole thing down. Now there's no damage, nothing. And also, when the emergency vehicles arrive, you will see people walking around very calmly. The only thing they do, they don't go sort of like in underneath the truck where apparently all of the people, all of the wounded, except for these three, and the dead must be under the truck because they are not visible outside. So, but there's no one trying to go underneath to pull anyone out. Instead, they're there putting out debris around the truck. And there's a cafe owner that I heard an interview with, and he said he was very confused because he thought he saw the truck reverse into position, and he didn't understand that anything had happened. And I would say this is exactly what happened. There's also a dash cam footage where they claim there's this cab driver who's standing in the very close to the Christmas market, and he's got this dash cam on.
Sure.
And you can suddenly you see the truck coming from in from the left and just goes very fast towards this Christmas market area. But he passes the entrance where it said that he entered, and there's no, you can't see the brake lights go on or anything like that, because he's like coming in at least 40 miles an hour, and then said to have made these absolutely impossible turns getting into the Christmas market without trashing the huts on the side.
Sure.
And no skid marks, no brake marks, no blood.
Sure.
No screams, no you know, the ambulances, you will see people walk around very calmly. It's the same, the very few photos there are of people on stretches and so on. It's
well,
the same
well,
two people.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Okay, I want to let me finish your statement because it brings up a question I wanted to mention. You said there are very few people. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry.
No, it's just you know, also we found there are no names of German victims at all. There are like eight big of these candles, you know, where they gather candles and flowers and so on. Normally, you see letters to the claimed victims, you know, there are photos of them, flowers, candles. Here,
sure.
There's no photos of anyone except one Israeli lady and
mm-hmm.
several photos of the killed driver. And
yeah.
In the media, there's absolutely no names published of any German victims. There's a few, there's an Italian lady as well, but that's it. Also, the German president went out on a press conference and said he was a little confused because the emergency vehicles were there before the alarm was sent out.
Wow. Okay, there's another obvious question. Okay, I've got this big festival in Germany. Probably lots of tourists there, lots of natives. You know, very festival. Everyone has got a cell phone. And every one of these cell phones has got cameras on them, or virtually everyone. It seems to me that I should have literally hundreds of hours from the various people filming this, or at least a few people. You know, I would have something because, you know, people are sitting there, they're filming their wife and their kids, and they're filming their friends, or they're taking photographs. I mean, this is the kind of thing where, especially in this day and age, where, like I said, basically everyone has a camera with them virtually all the time. I mean, was there anything like that? Because it would seem such an obvious thing.
Zero, zero, zero. This is also the thing. Where?
Zero?
I mean, people take photos of their hamburger and put on Facebook. Where are all the photos?
My sister does that. We go to restaurants and she does that. And I think it's silly. We every time we go out to a restaurant, we can't just eat the food. She has to take a picture of it. And you're right. That's literally true.
And then here, I mean, this is, I mean, if you were there, this would be one of the most traumatic experiences of your life. And then no films, nothing. There's nothing. And I also managed to get hold of There was an Italian couple that were wounded or injured in this attack. They claimed they were on German TV being interviewed and so on. I have when they were the film when they were tried out for casting as crisis actors.
Wow.
It's up on YouTube now where they're sitting laughing around, you know, on a blue screen background. You know, can you do this? Can you do? Yeah, of course, not a problem, and so on. It's and also if this was one incident, Roger, okay, but I have been looking into hundreds of these, and it is the same that happens again and again. And one of the things that always happens is that the CCTV cameras are shut down. I mean, taxpayers have to pay absolute millions to get them installed. Again, nobody asks for if they want them installed, but they're just everywhere. And then once you really need them, then suddenly they don't work.
Yeah, and that's the other classic thing. I know this is something, you know, like with the death of Princess Diana, where there's like 17 cameras, but they all magically didn't work. And, you know, it's like, 14. You know, show me actual film of a plane hitting the Pentagon. And, you know, one of the most heavily photographed buildings on the face of the earth for obvious reasons. And supposedly they were all confiscated. And it's like time after time, I remember there was one thing, there was a bombing in Russia where they actually had surveillance footage. The first time I've ever seen it, of the bomb going off this like railway station in Moscow. And it's like this, the first time I've actually seen real footage like that.
Yeah, but listen, Roger, do you know when that footage was used? That was used right after the attacks at the Brussels airport in Belgium, claiming that that was the bombs going off at the airport. But this was from Russia, 2010.
Oh, because that's another thing they do is they reuse things, because this happens like Sandy Hook, where they have this, they have an actor in two different roles, or they'll be showing something and it's like, wait a minute, that's not from Switzerland, that's from Brussels or something like that. That's from something else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same.
Because they recycle things.
Yeah. And also one thing.
Literally stock footage.
Yeah, or deception or diversion, or I don't know why they do it. I can just say they do it. And also another thing is that very, very often, if not, yeah, I can only say very, very often, the victims or the people being interviewed have some kind of connection with media. Either they're journalists or news presenters or media individuals or sports persons or, well, that's about it, but very often connected to media. Like after 9/11, for instance, I'm saying 100% of all the people that were interviewed live on these five channels, that main channels that was covering 9/11, all of them had some kind of direct connection with these news agencies, CNN, NBC, Fox, and so on. Maybe they were working in the cafeteria, or they were the wife of one of the executives, or all of them had direct connection here.
Hmm.
And
interesting
here in
you mentioned
Germany,
that because
so this is,
she, what?
No, no. So this is one of the things that I always look out for. The people that are being interviewed, who are they? Where do they come, you know, and so on, come from? And here, all of the like CNN and BBC were on location before German media even came there. I mean, what are the chances of that? And they were there in Paris. They were there at the Charlie Hebdo. They're there before the local news is there.
Yeah,
I would say,
and the thing is, and just a very basic logical thing, what are the odds? Because obviously, you know, well, a CNN is far bigger than, say, some local Paris news station. Paris news station is going to have obviously more journalist boots on the ground than Paris itself. They might, you know, if you're a newspaper headquartered in, say, Paris, your boots on the ground are maybe all in Paris. Why would, you know, the thing is, you might not have boots anywhere else, but at least in that one little area, it seems that you would be getting there first, because in that area, you certainly, one of your competitive advantages, you have more local news because you've got more journalists that, you know, are literally live right by. I remember CNN got caught where they were interviewing a protester, after Trump won, and it turns out the guy was a cameraman with them. And, you know, I've seen this, and this is, and the thing is, for every one time they get caught, it's like speeding. How many times do you not get caught?
Exactly. You had the guy that filmed the Nice attack. His name was Richard Gutja. He's an online journalist, sort of like a news sensation, this guy. And it turned out that he filmed when the truck started the attack in Nice. I've done many, many, many interviews. Please look on YouTube where I go through like a 2-hour interview, many of these attacks, step by step by step, just totally debunking them. Anyway, he was filming from the balcony. He was the guy. His wife, Einat Wilf, is one of the members of the Israeli Knesset. I mean, and formerly doing her military duty in Mossad. I mean, so what are the chances? Then right after Nice happened, there was this attack in München at a supermarket. And who was there filming? Well, Richard Gutjahr. What are the chances? And one of the people that was interviewed in the international media was his daughter. Okay, so you have when the Charlie Hebdo thing happened, do you remember when the police was allegedly shot on the pavement by two terrorists?
Yeah, I remember seeing that, yes.
Yeah, so who filmed that? Was that just you would think that it's some kind of person who lives in Paris and, you know, a French guy?
I figure it would be like an apartment dweller who happened to be home, was looking out his window, said, wait a minute, something fishy is going on here, and they grab their cell phone and they start filming out of the window. That's what I would have thought.
It was the deputy editor of one of the big TV channels in Israel.
Really?
Okay, so when you had the Bataclan attack, do you remember there was this woman who was hanging out of the window forever and ever and was being filmed by a guy? Okay,
yeah.
He was one of the journalists from one of the main newspapers in Paris. And here, when this happened, we had this video I mentioned before, that with this guy that came 90 seconds after it happened, allegedly happened. His name is Jan Holitzer. He's the online chef at the Berlin Morgenpost. Okay, so that's okay. But then the two other people that were interviewed there, I mean, we're talking about a stretch of 100 yards. We had Shadana Durrani. She's one of the some kind of editor at Google and also like a travel journalist from the U.S. We have Emma Rushton, an English journalist who is also there, right, when this happened. And guess who was there but just left before this happened? Well, only the most well-known Israeli terror expert alive. The professor in politics and terrorism expert Shlomo Shapiro, who then was on German TV in many different channels giving interviews about this. He said he was on location and then he just had a bite and took the bus and he was just about to leave when this happened and he heard the sirens and so on. What are the chances? The terror
question.
Expert. And
yeah,
he's just there. I mean, we're talking a stretch of 100 yards, not even that. And all of these people, including CNN and BBC, are so close to this tiny little area.
Yeah.
Anyway,
exactly.
So,
what are the chances? Because you would think, just logically, that the people you'd be interviewing, yeah, well, I live, you know, half a mile away, and I come here every year for Christmas with my family. You know, and you know, I drive a truck. I've got something like that. You would think it'd be people from very ordinary backgrounds like that, that, you know, were very local. I mean, but it's interesting, and oftentimes they also hide the fact, the backgrounds of a lot of these people, obviously a lot of the crisis actors. I mean, in the case of that gentleman, Shlomo, obviously didn't hide his background because he was an expert who just happened to very coincidentally be on scene. I think a very important point you make is that, you always have these unbelievable coincidences, apparently, where it's like, what are the odds? Because, you know, like I said, just like the shooting of that gentleman at Charlie Hebdo. What are the odds of someone like that shooting it, as opposed to just being some apartment dweller who maybe was sick for the day and was looking out their window and said, something's fishy up here, and they started filming, and they just happened to capture it? Because that's how you think it would be. And that's a very important point, is who filmed this stuff, which I never really thought of. Because the thing is, like I said, if it was a random person who just happened to get lucky, you could understand that, or unlucky, depending on how you define it. But when it's always certain people over and over again, when, you know, this is, you know, it's like as likely as you catching a photograph of someone being struck by lightning, you know?
Exactly. And it's like, you always have to be aware of this, because, like, sometimes you see on the news, oh my God, this rocket or this bomb exploded in this house. Why was somebody standing filming the house and then boom, the explosion came? The normal way it would be is like, boom, and then you start filming. But if somebody is filming it before it even happens, they must be part of it, or the chances are very slim, to say the least.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That's a whole other issue. It's like, who is filming, which I never really thought about. And it just, but once again, you said, like, the Farmer John logic, very, very simple questions. It's like, this is why, I mean, you can see, like, a surveillance film where it's like, okay, you've got, you know, 50 hours of absolutely nothing, and then you've got 30 seconds where something happens. I mean, that actually makes a lot more sense, because that's more, you know, that's just brute force. I mean, I'm just filming a certain thing, and there's a little bit of it that's relevant, and then there's, you know, tons of hours that, you know, aren't.
For sure. And then, but then this is where this dash camera seems possible, you know, the thing that was filmed. But where is the date? Where is the time code that is normally there? There's nothing there. And
sure,
this is also one of these things that, and also very blurry. I had a person in Germany. It's so wonderful, because now I have like a network of people all over the place. So as soon as something happened, I can just send them there and, you know, film on location. I ask, can you take a photo there from this angle, and so on, because not always am I possible to, is it possible for me to go there on my own, since I'm a one-man band. And
sure,
he went there and filmed the day after at the same time of day. It was in the evening. And with
mm-hmm.
the same lighting, and so it was not the day after, it was a few days after, but the exact same lighting. When he filmed it with just an ordinary mobile phone, cell phone, it was super sharp. The lighting was good, super sharp, but the official video we're being shown, where you see all of these things, where they walk around among these victims, they claim, blurry, dark. You can't see any faces. The camera is mostly pointed downwards. And
sure,
you can see he walks up. Also, a natural reaction, I would say, if a massive truck had just massacred its way through a big crowd and some buildings and so on, wouldn't you look at the truck when it's standing there? Wouldn't you sort of, or try to go there and help and check if somebody is underneath? But here you see people
sure.
walk around the truck, you know, an old lady, two old ladies with a handbag just passing, you know, nobody even looks at it. And also
really?
People are more occupied with trying to you know, lift up some of these parts of a building that has been trashed, you know, instead of looking, oh, sorry, there's 12 dead and more than 50 wounded. Maybe somebody need a hand. But there's not a sound. There's not anyone screaming, anyone moaning. I mean, and also, there's no ceremonies for the victims in Germany. The only thing is that the German president was at the hospital. And I mean, these politicians, they do not miss a chance of, you know, shaking hands with somebody and
sure.
get themselves a PR boost. Here, there's no photos. And the
yeah.
only thing is, he comes out on the outside of the outside the hospital together with a doctor and talks about these things. I tell
yeah.
you, there are no victims. That's the whole thing. There are no victims.
Wow. Yeah, it makes sense now that you're explaining it. The other thing is also, even at the beginning, there's little things that don't quite make sense. One thing I noticed in Florida with this most recent incident was, They had just coincidentally, I guess, introduced legislation, the Florida legislature to more gun control. And I've noticed that, I don't know how often you've seen this pattern or if you've even looked for it, where it's like, you know, it's like, for example, I'm just making one up, like missing the legislation, or where, I don't know, you know, maybe a big company, they come out with, you know, like with the scanners, you know, where they put all these airport scanners in, you know, they develop all that, they're sitting in a warehouse in Tampa, and then it just so happens we have that thing with that guy flying from Amsterdam to Detroit or whatever, and now we need to have these full body scanners. I mean, how often do you see, well, wait a minute, you know, right before that there was this legislation or this, you know, insider company introduced this new product or service, or you see what I'm saying? There was something that happened right before it. It's like, it just seems like this is perfect for their stock price. This is perfect for getting this legislation in. This is perfect for accomplishing some other agenda.
Problem, reaction, solution. See how they build it up first, prepare. I mean, it's like the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. All of that was prepared before 9/11. Boom, 9/11 happens, everything prepared, boom, booms into action. When the mass shootings or the shootings were in Copenhagen, a shooting that I publicly predicted on several programs 1 month exactly on the hour before it happened, when that happened, within days, they presented a new anti-terror budget. I mean, that it was like, I don't know how many hundreds of pages and calculations on how much was needed for new anti-terror measurements and so on.
Sure.
That was there, ready within 2 days. And then Denmark was the next, the meeting for an international meeting of anti-terror measurements, where the exact same countries were the main characters at this meeting, the exact same countries where these terror attacks have happened, all of them NATO members. It is being repeated. They do the same. So in Fort Lauderdale, I love that the airport is also Fort Lauderdale Hollywood Airport, because I mean that's it. It's, we're looking at filmed events again. So how can I claim that? You have, for instance, there is no record of from Air Canada of him, this claimed shooter, to have arrived there. There's no checking
of
weapon.
Sure. Yeah. The other thing about that was, it's like, if I'm going to do a shooting, why would I fly like 4,000 miles? I was looking at from Anchorage to like Miami as a proxy. I mean, it's not saying Fort Lauderdale, but I mean, they're, the two cities are very close to each other. I'm going to fly 4,000 miles and then do a shooting? Huh? That seemed rather bizarre. And, you know, and then I know Air Canada said we have no record of this gentleman. And, you know, and you just see all these things like that that just, even on the face, don't seem to make sense. Right off the beginning, without even knowing any details, that's one thing that really struck me.
And then, just like you mentioned, notice what have been going on in the media before, during the holiday, Christmas holiday and so on. There's been a lot of discussions where they've been proposing to allow weapons inside airports. I mean, that is just absolutely out of this world to allow a thing like that. But that is to get the emotions going, to get the debate going, the emotions getting them high, and then, boom, you hit like this to make a point, you know?
Yeah.
You have,
well, one thing... It is exactly. Well, also, I know we talked about being a theater production, and you mentioned the Boston bombing. A little while ago, I saw this this play right near where I live. It was like a comedy of errors type of play, where basically it's kind of this type of English play. And like, there was one scene in the movie where like the woman was in her bedroom, and I guess this guy had gotten drunk and was like passed out in her bed or something like that. And she says something along the lines of, well, I hope my husband doesn't, you know, step in, because, you know, it will look like she was cheating with this guy, you know. But even though she wasn't, it was just that she'd gone there to fix her makeup or something. And, of course, her husband immediately steps in. And, you know, like, we have, like, this comedy of errors type of situation where somehow magically the thing that shouldn't happen somehow happens. You know, her husband just happens to step into the bedroom at that moment. And of course, obviously that was staged, but in some ways, a lot of these things remind me of that, where it's like, I certainly hope my husband doesn't step into our bedroom now, because, you know, he might think I'm cheating with this guy, even though, you know, he just happens to have passed out on my bed, and it really wasn't like it looks like.
The thing is, you have to look at normal life. What are the chances? I mean, sometimes things happen. There are such things as coincidences and strange happenings, for sure. But when you look at these type of things, it just gets bizarre. For instance, when they blew up the government building in Norway, there was especially two women that sort of, they were photographed everywhere. One had her whole face covered in blood, and the other one had like a wooden rod sticking out of her head from the explosion. I mean, looked horrific on still images. I was there several times trying to get hold of the witnesses and film stuff, and I managed to get hold of a video that was filmed while this whole thing happened. And you have these two women that were sort of like the models of terror, the front cover of terror for internationally. It was spread all over the world, these awful images. But I have video footage where you can see them being led around, walking around with these, one of them with this 30 centimeters thing sticking out of her head, the other one covered in blood. Not a sound, nothing like that. Then you have, there's five ambulances lined up, but they're walking up and down. They set them down on one side of the street. Their photos taken. Then they take them across the street. They walk up and down. They set them down there again, right in front of the ambulance. One guy walks up to this lady that her face is totally covered in what should be blood, and checks her pulse. And then they stop a normal bus and put all of these victims in the bus instead of getting them in the ambulances and straight to the hospital.
Sure.
You know, and then they take off, and the bus is followed by one of the ambulances. I mean, what are we looking at?
Yeah, and the thing is, one thing, of course, there's been a lot of, I know like Charlotte Isherby Thompson talked about the dumbing down of America, and of course, like Common Core, where it's that we're not supposed to notice simple logical things like this, like someone's face is covered in blood. The logical thing is that they could very well still be bleeding, and they could be bleeding somewhere, you know, on their face or their neck. Why would I be measuring their blood pressure? I mean, you know, that'd be ridiculous. I'd be sitting there probably trying to cover up their face, find out where the blood was coming from, you know, trying to remove the blood, you know, because it's not a logical thing to do in that situation. And time after time, you see things that just are non sequiturs, where it's like, this doesn't make sense. This is not what you would do in that situation.
You have a 30 centimeter thing sticking out of your head. You got five ambulances right in front of you, and you take the bus. I mean, I don't know about you, but I would be quite concerned if I had a thing like that sticking out of my skull, you know.
Yeah.
And then she appears just 2 weeks later, no scar, no nothing, at work. Well done. Here in Fort Lauderdale, there's one man that is said to have been shot. There's footage that he's sitting outside holding up his hand because there's a lot of blood coming, they say. He's sitting there for a long time. I've got footage from him from several different angles, video footage and so on. And then finally, one of these emergency vehicles arrive. They come, they drive up, they get out. They don't even go up to the guy. They get in the car and reverse it away, and he's still sitting there. Is this logical? Is it a logical way of things unfolding? I think not. The reason they don't care about him is because he's not injured. He is one of these so-called crisis actors.
Sure.
And
they knew about that, but time after time, I think what you do is even before you actually get boots on the ground, there are some very logical, simple things that don't make sense. Like, I know you're talking about this grainy footage, because in this day and age, I get really great footage off of a cell phone. I mean, you know, unless you're in a really, really dark area, you're going to be able to get pretty good footage. I mean, regardless of unless the lighting is absolutely terrible, unless it's almost pitch black. And yet they get grainy footage all the time, you know, in spite of the fact that it's so easy to get really good footage of virtually anything.
You should have, like Berlin, like these other places, there should be so much footage, super sure. sharp, and so on. Here you have also, I've got the footage of the same people running out of the arrivals as well as the departure hall. Two different areas of the airport, same people running out, you know, like looking scared.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of so many of these things and so people say, but how can they involve, you know, that must be hundreds and hundreds of people must have involved. How can they do that? I mean, people wouldn't be able to keep quiet and so on. You do not need that. You need a very few. I mean, if you go into an airport and you fire off a few blanks and somebody is playing and looking like he's being hit and something like that, the crowd will just spread, you know, hundreds of people will run away if they think it's for real.
Sure.
So
exactly.
All of the people running doesn't have to be involved or have to be crisis actors. Absolutely not. Many of the police officers that are there, they've just been told, guard this area of the airport, you know, make sure nobody enters. They have no idea what's going on behind them. But we're talking
sure.
about a core group that are carrying these things out.
Sure. And this is also a very important point. I mean, you know, anyone who's ever worked for someone else, oftentimes, especially if you're not a senior person in that organization, you're just told to do X. You're not told why you're doing X or the bigger context. Now, some companies, it's a little bit better, but it's certainly not unusual to be told just to stand here and guard or to go, you know, take the stuff that's in point A and move to point B. It's very typical that you're just told the absolute minimum, like clean this floor or whatever. So this is, you know, usually the case, I would say, in a lot of organizations where you're just told to do X and that's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
These operations are always totally compartmentalized. It's on a need-to-know chain, need-to-know basis, and very important that as few people as possible know the big picture. You should, just like you say, you're just informed about your little part, nothing else. This is even when I'm an expert on many major assassinations like JFK and so on, and many of the other top political ones as well. And even when you get hold of people that were part of the assassination, very often they have no idea. They had no idea even who the victim was. They were just informed, you know, target, blue
sure.
shirt, fur hat, or whatever. And they were not aware of the other teams that were there, because very often it's multiple teams, triangular fire, multiple escape cars, and so on. They were not aware about the whole picture, and that is standard design. This is how it's done.
Sure. Well, I know you talked about the JFK assassination before, where you had a bunch of people who were like well-known mobsters who were there, who actually weren't involved in it at all, but they were simply there to create a distraction. They were just told to be in Dallas on November 22nd, and you know a lot of them were probably shocked as anyone with what happened. They were just told to be there.
Dealey Plaza was packed with people from the mob, killers, soldiers of fortune, people from Operation 40, from Alpha 66, from the CIA secrets. I mean, they were just all over the place. And many of them, there were multiple operations going on, so they didn't know what was happening, many of them. You know,
so they're compartmentalized,
like you say,
then, too.
Totally, because it is extremely important that only very few people know the whole picture, because otherwise the people behind these operations would be totally open for blackmail or for that somebody would leak information and something like that. So it's crucial for them to keep it to a very tight little group, and then
sure.
if somebody starts leaking or something like that, they take care of them, they terminate them.
Sure.
And
I understand. Well, the thing is, what it comes down to is for people to be able to sense on their own whether something is false flag or not, or you know, if it's some kind of engineered thing, is so much it can be done just through simple common sense. It's like we have this, take the Berlin truck, because that's a very recent one. Well, you know, I've got a bunch of holiday, you know, well-wishers getting together and, you know, having this big celebration. Just there should be tons of film. You know, it just some very simple things like that that don't seem to be. Or like, you know, how could they get in that tiny little space? Doesn't look like there's enough room to get a truck in. And, you know, when I go to things like that, they always block off the area. They put up like these concrete barriers because they obviously don't want, you know, trucks or cars getting in there. And it'd be a very special one that would get in there, you know, for some reason. So, I mean, I think a lot of it is that we can often just, to a large extent, figure it out from some simple common sense where it's like, you know, why would a guy fly from Alaska to Florida to go on a shooting rampage? You know, things like that, these are kind of obvious things.
If you take the Nice attack, which was almost like a copy of this one, I would say, carried out by the exact same group. My suggestion is that we are looking at like a small group, almost like a tour, like a rock band on tour, but the Rocky Horror Show, that type of theater group, being transported in army planes from country to country, then transported in buses on location, carrying out the exact same theme again and again and again. Same people running around in SWAT team uniform, police uniforms in Denmark, as in Paris, as in Belgium, as in the UK, and so on, carrying out the exact same thing. So, for instance, the Nice attack. Listen to this. What are the chances? Okay, here, there's a truck coming in. It's a 19-ton truck, massive big, that is not allowed into the center of the city, which they are not in the center. And especially this was on the Bastille Day, the national day of the 14th of July, a very important day in France. Okay, so the truck is in this area for about 9 hours. The police is said to have approached the truck driver and said, "You're not allowed to be here. What are you doing here?" And then the truck driver, I kid you not, said, "I'm selling ice cream." And then the police said, "Well, in that case, it's okay." So they left him alone. That's the official story. Then there is no CCTV footage of this truck at all during the whole day. And then, okay, that would be possible if Nice didn't have CCTV cameras. But Nice is the city in France with the most CCTV cameras. They have 915 units in the city center. And then nothing. And the day after, the authorities demanded that all video footage from these cameras should be confiscated. I ask you, is this the behavior of an authority or government or people that care for you? Or is it the behavior of a criminal mind who have just trying to cover their butt?
Mm-hmm.
Can I go back to this Berlin thing?
Sure.
Also, because it said there is
sure.
A Polish truck. It's
mm-hmm.
a Polish truck, and the owner of this company, his name is Ariel Surawski. He's
mm-hmm.
said to be Polish, but when you try, and I haven't been able to track him down in Poland, but I've been able to track a very similar individual in the U.S. with the exact same name. We're talking about that they have very strong connection with the Mossad, the CIA, MI6. They very often work tightly hand in hand. I have that from inside sources like CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum and so on. That who have been part of these false flags, he said that is standard procedure depending on what country you are sort of attacking. And I've got a photo of Ariel Surawski, who is the truck owner. I have a photo with him and the Israeli ambassador to Poland, Shiva Weiss, where he's taking part of a Jewish cultural festival, and he's even holding Shiva's book in his hand and so on. So I can only say that I'm not talking about the people of Israel. I'm talking about Mossad and the government behind this nation. They are so, their fingerprints are all over these, all of the ones, as far as I know, for at least the last 2 years in Europe, with connections to the states as well. Do you know at Sandy Hook, they were some of the police, the armed police that was filmed there in military uniforms, were speaking Hebrew. Go figure.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think there'd be many Hebrews as speaking people in Connecticut, although I guess there could be a large Jewish population because it's so near. But still, that seems awfully unusual. And this is what you're seeing time and time again. You're seeing all these oddities like this. One thing I wanted to mention, one thing about the truck, there's two things I wanted to mention. The first thing is that, you know, like these truck attacks, I'm wondering if that's part of the agenda of getting us all of our cars, where it's like, you know, you say, oh, well, look what happened in Berlin. If we had, you know, if we could have overridden the controls on the truck when that guy hijacked the truck, we could have prevented this whole thing, because there's a big agenda right now of getting us all of our cars. And you're seeing like Google doing this, and you're seeing Apple. You're seeing this whole thing right now where there's this big agenda. Do you think, I suspect that a lot of what you're seeing involving, because I was wondering, why have they shifted from guns to now a lot of times motor vehicles? So I think that is a very big issue right there, is that they're doing that. What's your comment on that?
I think it's a very clever observation that you're doing there, because these things do not happen just by coincidence, because suddenly you, before New Year's Eve in New York and in Sydney, Australia is one of these countries that are involved in this as well, you saw preparations against truck attacks, you know, because, ooh, suddenly trucks are really dangerous as well. And this is part of the whole thing. They use these things as part of the PSYOP, part of their agenda of how to lock us down more and more. And also, they add all of this product placement crap in these operations as well.
Product placement,
you know, in movies.
Yeah,
where,
I know what that is. So it's like they're interviewing people and they just have me drinking a can of Coke or something like that?
No, it's much more than that. When you look at the photos from these alleged terror attacks, check the photos in the middle where the shop, you know, where the focus is. Like, for instance, one of the things that have repeatedly appeared at the Bataclan, that attacks in France, also in the U.S. and so, are Nike shoes. There's somebody that they say, well, the victim was being shot at, so they ran away. So the thing, what they did was they threw their shoes on the ground and ran away. That is not very logical to me. If you are scared, I mean, you run and you keep your shoes on. But
yeah,
you're going to run faster,
and also, obviously, you could damage your feet if you're running without your shoes. You know, exactly. You wouldn't take the time to take your shoes off.
But then you have, right in the middle of these photos, you have like police, SWAT teams, stuff like that. That is what the photo is of. But then right in the center of this photo, you have several, like where this Nike shoes, they're standing in a perfect lighting, perfect sharpness of the photo, there to affect your subconscious, I would suggest. Now at Fort Lauderdale, you had the gun, the empty gun that is on the floor. Next to it, there's a Starbucks cup put right next to it. When the Brussels bombing attacks, the claimed ones at the airport, all the maps that was given out to media were not, they said, okay, bomb one went off here at check-in number one, check-in number two, and then Starbucks. That was the one. The word Starbucks was on all of these maps that was given out to international media. When the München shooting was, the shooter was standing right underneath the McDonald's M, and it was filmed not horizontal but vertical, so that this M would be there. When the London bombings, the 7/7 bombings, Coca-Cola is keep coming back as well. When the 7/7 bombings happened in London, where one of the things that happened was that there was a bus that was blown up, allegedly. Mm-hmm. On one of the sides of the bus, there was a big poster saying, "Terror, pure brilliant." On the other side, there was a big poster on the side of the bus. It said nothing but a big Coca-Cola bottle and a massive big explosion behind it. So that everyone that was looking at it saw Coca-Cola, because they know that thousands of people are looking at these things. When the
Sure.
Charlie Hebdo shooting happened, in the office where it said that these 10, 15 people in the part of this newspaper were being murdered, there are no photos, hardly any photos from the crime scene. But there is one where there's a chair standing on top of a puddle of blood. And you can see there's no blood spatter on the chair. The chair has been put on top of the blood. There's no movement, no nothing. So it looks very staged. And then right in the center of this image, there is a Puma bag exactly in the middle.
Okay. Well, it's about we've gone for an hour. Do you have a few more minutes, or we need to end it right now? Because I have a couple things I'd like to go to you quickly. If you've got a few more moments.
For sure, go for it.
Okay. Well, like I was saying, because I was noticing, you know, but what I think one point I want to get to time and time again is that for people who can't go to these locations, is just to ask some very simple logical questions. The other, you know, for example, just to logically think, is this the way people would react in this kind of situation? Now, granted, it's hard to know you would react, but I think if I was running for my life, I would not be taking off my shoes. You know, I mean, at a very basic level. If I'm in a Christmas festival, there would be tons of people filming, and they'd be very sharp because in this day and age, everyone's and their brother has got a cell phone. And so I think, first of all, a very important point when people are seeing this stuff is to think, does this even make sense at the most basic level? I mean, like, you know, why wasn't there tons of things like for that Berlin, truck? You know, and, you know, it's like, why would the photo be so blurry? You know, so I think the big point I want to make is that they're trying also so dumb us down that we won't even question things like this. We won't even ask simple, basic questions. And I think that's part of it, because all this stuff is being done in concert. It's like, you know, they put fluoride in the water and, you know, all these different ways of dumbing us down. And then so we'll believe this kind of stuff, where it's like, you know, where we won't be saying, well, this doesn't make sense, because we'll be too stupid to realize it, basically. I think that's a very big point. And to really think in terms of, if this were like a film production, what would you need to do? Like, for example, I've noticed things where I see so-called footage and it's got multiple camera angles. It doesn't make sense to me that it's like, if this was really just randomly shot, someone just happened to be lucky and shot, not even knowing that, well, they seem to have a pretty good camera angle. They seem to, you know, there seems to be multiple angles, almost like they had director yelling cut and, doing it a second time. And, I think one of the big things also is we're being conditioned to blur the line between fantasy and reality, because you go to a movie and it seems so realistic, even though intellectually you know it isn't, that you kind of forget that when you're seeing these so-called, footages and you see like multiple camera angles or just perfect shots or something that's like perfectly framed, that almost never happens. That's like with a model, that's like with actors. And so I think the other point I wanted to make is that, you know, first of all, people need to use common sense and also realize how we're being mind controlled. One other point I wanted to make, but, you know, how we're being mind controlled to blur the lines between fantasy and reality thanks to movies, because we think of the movies as being real and the, you know, reality as being a fantasy.
I think very good observations, all of them. What I would suggest is also, when these things happen, ask yourself, who benefits from me being freaked out about this? Who benefits? And you will see very, very often when these things happen, please be aware of that there is a possibility that the journalist, the reporter on site, and the witness can be part of this whole operation, which in my opinion is standard. And since, just like you say, there's so much fluoride and we've been dumbed down and so on, our span of concentration is very short, so they need to deliver it quickly. So very often when something like this happens, you will have there's a witness and there is a reporter. And so the reporter says, so what happened? What happened? Oh, it was this awful thing that happened. Problem. All of these women and children were just standing, were hurt and so on. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. to get us into an emotional, oh my God, something needs to be done. And then the reporter will serve you the solution. So wait for it when these happen. Wait for what the reporter says. Because like at the Charlie Hebdo, for instance, there were these mass shootings. And then the reporter said, well, this means that we have to heighten the security at the airports. What the hell was that? Where did the airport fit in at all? But that
yeah, exactly. Nothing to do with airports, because that's often something you'll see where something unrelated, where it's like, this
totally.
Is nothing to do with that.
Do you know when the mass shootings happened in Norway, the chief of the secret police, a woman, she was being interviewed afterwards, and there's said to have been 77 people killed on the island and in Oslo. And she then said, well, this wouldn't have happened had the population been microchipped. What was that?
Well,
do you see what I'm saying?
They're trying to tie it in, sure. Exactly, because the microchipping is part of the agenda. I don't know if you're familiar with David Icke's work on this, but yeah, I'm seeing a lot of the stuff. And you know what I do personally? Every time I go and I go see something like a microchipping, I see really interesting articles. If I can leave a comment, I do. I explain, well, the microchipping is an agenda that's been at work at least 20 years. It's about being able to surveil us. It's about being able to, you know, cause us illness and perhaps death if we disobey. It's about having control of us all the time. But I want to get into all that. One thing I wanted to the other point I wanted to mention, and it's like, because, you know, I'm trying not to, like, say 10 things and not give you a chance to respond. And sometimes when I do that, I don't get to the other point. You might not remember this, but last time I think we talked, I mentioned this article by John Rappaport on information flicker rate. And basically what this is this is where they deliberately create – he gave Sandy Hook as an example, where they're giving you the narrative, and then they'll tell you there's like a guy in the woods, and then they stop mentioning that, and then they'll tell you this. They'll tell you all kinds of things that are red herrings, and the only way you can follow it is by – basically forgetting what they previously said, because it's like they tell you it was a Glock 45 when it's a Glock 9mm or something like that. So what they're constantly doing is they're constantly giving you things that, you know, are contradictory. Now there might be a certain amount of this where the story is breaking, you know, you learn things, but they never go back and correct the old errors. And so it's a way of getting us to be illogical and getting us to memory hole, because like take the Sandy Hook. I don't know if you ever looked at that article. I think I told you about it. It was Activist Post or Waking Times. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Because, well, to educate everyone, basically John Rappaport wrote an article, actually several articles, on information flicker rate, where essentially they purposely make these shootings and things like this illogical. They have red herrings. They bring up things that are never, you know, they bring up investigative threads that are never discussed, that are never formally dismissed. And the whole idea is to destroy our ability to think logically, because we're in a situation where we're keeping up with the story. And it's like, what happened to the shooter in the woods? Wait a minute. What happened? How come, you know, you're saying there's like footage, but then you never show the footage and it doesn't exist? Where they're constantly – it's actually another way of dumbing us down, basically, of making us more logical, because we're constantly having the story being changed, and they're never saying, well, you know, we were wrong about the shooter in the wood. He was just a hunter, or, you know, it was just something else. They never mention that. And I think that's because, as you talked about, I remember in our previous interview, one of them, they're trying to get as much bang for the buck. They're not merely trying to get legislation passed or to bring in new more police or whatever. They're also trying to put us in a state of perpetual confusion. And so we're very suggestible. And so we'll buy whatever they're saying, because it's like we're so confused. Wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. So I suspect that a lot of the time they're doing these things that are illogical, it could be for information flicker rate. They're doing it deliberately to keep us confused. So that way we have to, you know, become very suggestible. And just to follow the story, we have to agree with whatever they're most recently saying. And this is, of course, also doublethink, where I say to you, 2 + 2 = 5, and then I say 2 + 2 = 7, 13. I start rattling off numbers, and 2 + 2 is whatever I say is at that moment. And so I'm wondering if sometimes all this deliberate confusion, it's done. They could have made the operation a lot tighter. They purposely made it so confusing because they wanted to confuse us, so that way – we can get a double think where, you know, whatever the last thing you said is true, and even if you contradict yourself 10 seconds later, well, that's true also, and I forget what the previous thing you said. You see what I'm saying? I'm wondering if they're doing this as a way of conditioning us, because you're seeing how things are getting more and more absurd. It's like, you know, if I say, so Ole, you know, and then I say, I never called you Ole. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, it's gaslighting us. We're, you know, we're basically there. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because I think there's even a deeper level as to why they're doing these operations in such a way that they're so confusing. And it seems that they're doing a poor job of playing these things out. They're making obvious mistakes. And I'm wondering if they're just doing it to keep us perpetually confused as a way so they can get us to accept whatever absurd idea they have. And, you know, just like I said, 2 + 2 = 5. Now it's 13. Now it's 28. You see what I'm saying?
But look at the number of dead and wounded in these operations. They keep changing. They keep changing all the time. And I don't think it's that difficult to say, okay, there's one dead body there. That's one. There's another one over there. That's two.
Just a second.
Do you know, there was a claimed mass shooting, the first one ever in Germany this summer. Okay. To start with, they said that there were 50. That then changed to 25. Did you know, you need to be really on the top of these things, you know, and be follow it minute by minute to see these things happen. Then it went down after 2 days from having 50 dead people. Reuters went out and said, no, sorry, there was no dead at all. There was a misunderstanding. How can you make a mistake like that? With the mass shooting in Norway, there were 88 people dead. No, it went down after more than a week, almost 10 days, suddenly they said, no, sorry, it was 69, and then it was 77. How can you make things like that? How can you not be able to count the number of casualties? But this is how they do it. Just like you say, they're playing ping pong with our brain. And it's also, I think, to discredit people like myself and people who are researching this thing, because it just sounds so crazy, many of these things that we say. But I follow Farmer Brown's logic. What happened? Why? Who did it? Who benefits? Who benefits is the most important. Cui bono, the old one.
Sure. Well, that's once again just getting back to the very most basic foundations. Yeah, who benefits by this? Who benefits by us believing this? And just to really keep the focus on the fundamentals, because they're doing everything they can to confuse us and to lie to us and to mislead us and to get us to go along with whatever it is they want us to do.
Yeah, and part of these operations are marketing agencies that are specialized, just like, you know, if you want to sell Coca-Cola or whatever you want to sell, you have teams that are very, very good at manipulating your mind into wanting their product. And here the product is fear. But also they mix in these other things, I would suggest. So they know how to play you. They know how to – you know, it's also – we were talking product placement. When the bombs went out outside the stadium in Paris, it is said that there were 3 suicide bombers that blew themselves up. First it was 2, then it was 3, then it was 1, then it was 2. Once again, the numbers kept changing. Absolutely no footage from the crime scene, whatever. They've shown one photo where there's one drop of blood, and that is from 3 people blowing themselves up with explosives. I mean, what are the chances that it would make a massive mess? But anyway,
true.
There's one guy there who said that he was nearby, the explosion went off, and there was a piece of shrapnel that hit his mobile phone. So the mobile phone saved him. Being interviewed on many, many international medias, holding out his Samsung phone, saying with a crack in it, saying, oh, my God, the mobile phone saved him.
What a great ad for the phone.
Then you had the exact same thing happen in New Year's Eve when an American guy was being carried out from this nightclub, the Reina, where they claimed there's another mass shooting. Absolutely not true, the way we're being told. He's lying totally calm on the stretcher, being carried away, and with a little handkerchief around his foot, his leg. He was shot with an automatic weapon. And then he claims the same thing, that his cell phone saved his life. There was a bullet that hit him. And in Fort Lauderdale, it was a Mac Pro that one of the people had one of those in his backpack, and one of the bullets ricocheted and hit his Mac Pro and saved his life. Do you, it's the same story being repeated again and again. And also, there, if you haven't noticed, there's another one. They have this app that, they're selling. It's called Telegram. And they claim all the terrorists are using it because it's highly encrypted and so on. And every time something like this happens, they say, oh, the ISIS warriors use this app. And there's the logo of the app and a description of the app, what it can do, and so on, in the text. But what does that tell you? It's product placement.
Sure. Well, the thing is, they have actually a more sophisticated version of product placement is where it's called, I think, called behavioral placement. I'm sure you're familiar with this term, where the whole idea is where it's actually built into the story. It's like if I had a story and it revolved, you know, that there were a bunch of gold coins in a Coke can. And so, you know, throughout the story, I'm constantly trying to find this Coke can and asking people and looking for people drinking Coke, because there's like this rare gold coin worth $1 million in it. And so I actually, because what they're actually doing is they're weaving into the official narrative product placement. So it's actually one level beyond that. I think it's called behavioral placement. You understand what I'm saying? Where, like I said, where I've got something where it's centered around, you know, like, you know, a spy thriller. And I got all this list of these secret agents. It's on my Mac Pro and, you know, and it's stolen and I'm, you know, chasing down, you know, Lisbon, trying to get my Mac Pro. And so in the very storyline, I've weaved in, you know, a product. And that's what you're really talking about, behavioral placement.
Totally. But I tell you, after also there's slogans and logos being used in this thing. I mean, right after this happened at the Charlie Hebdo, Je suis Charlie, what is that? That is a slogan. It's not like somebody just came up with it saying, I am Charlie. And also, Je suis is spelled almost like Jesus. So it works really well internationally as well.
You
also have all of these photos of people holding up like posters where it says, Je suis Charlie, black background, white print. Okay, it's said that people printed out these things just spontaneously. But you know how expensive ink is for a printer. Would you not print black text on a white background? But here, all of them have the exact same font printed white on black, or, you know, the black background is black, in the thousands. When you go there, there were about 30,000 soldiers in Paris the days before preparing this whole thing. There was massive big drills going on. And then right when this happened, they were all on leave. But I would say, what does 30,000 soldiers look like in civilian clothes? They look exactly like that, filling up the streets. Then when these things happened, both in Copenhagen, I believe in Paris as well, there were all of these thousands of candles, people walking around in the streets, you know, in the memory of the victims and so on, with these big candles. They were given out for free. Who was giving them out for free? These are expensive candles. Who was giving it out to the crowds in the thousands?
And this is another very important point. This is also getting back to just understanding the logistics of these things, where it's like, how could a truck be driving in these very narrow streets? How do they overcome the concrete barriers? Where you've got these basic logistic things, like having worked in marketing for many years, you know, getting even hundreds of signs is a real pain. You have to do it way ahead of time. You know, you have to have sign-offs. There's a lot of work involved. You know, you have to create PDF files, and they have to, you know, you're doing all kinds of stuff. But most people aren't involved in that end of it. But the point is that just a basic level, once again, the question is, you know, there was a TV show in America, I think, called How Do They Do It?, where they were showing, like, how they manufacture a pen or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah,
you know, there's a tremendous amount of work. You can take any common item, like a digital recorder, I'm just looking at scissors, right, just in front of me. And the amount of work involved in manufacturing, getting that scissors to my desk was huge. And that's the same thing where it's like we have to kind of be looking at how do they do that? How do thousands of people just happen to have probably the same exact kind of candle, I'd be willing to bet? You know, how does that work? Or like I remember the Charlie Hebdo. Yeah, the signs were all identical. It's like that just spontaneously happens. I mean, you know, just once again, just simple common sense. This is what so much of this comes down to, even without knowing all the details. It's just like, how did that happen? How did that happen?
Do you know that when the Bataclan attacks happened in Paris, there were buildings lit up in the colors of the colored light in the French flag, the color, yeah. And the countries where these buildings were lit up were exactly the same countries we're talking about that have had their own alleged terror attacks. The same involved, including Australia. Once again, Australia is part of this whole thing. But
sure.
1 hour before it happened, please remember there's a time difference of 1 hour between the UK and Paris. 1 hour before the attacks happened, the Olympic Stadium in London was lit up in the French colors. And then after a few minutes, shut down again because somebody messed up.
Yeah, right.
You know, there is a, I think there's a TV channel called WSNS or something like that in Florida. They were online with news about this thing in Fort Lauderdale 4 hours before it happened.
Really?
Before it happened. Images of Sandy Hook was uploaded the day before it happened officially. You can see the time date on databases. When you upload, there is a time code that shows when those images were uploaded. All of these images that was then spread out on Sandy Hook and many other of these operations are uploaded beforehand.
Sure. Well, I know that there was something, there was a fundraiser for raising money for gun control by Bloomberg. It said something big is going to happen like the day before. And there are instances like that on Twitter accounts where people set up funds to help these people before the actual events happened. And that's a very good point, because one of the things is also, it's just that everything cannot be coordinated down to the last second. And in order to get things done, sometimes you have to, parts of it get revealed first. It's like I was at a job and they changed the name of the company and they're going to have the big announcement of it. And no one was supposed to know it, but because I worked in the marketing department, you know, I got to see the handbags and all the stuff they had for the new name. Because it's almost impossible if you got something really big, like say you're changing the name of a company, for some people not to know ahead, just because, you know, you need to have the IT people create the new website with the new name. You need to, you know, have the new domain names for the emails. There's all these things like that that have to go in the background, just using that example. So I think that's a very important point, is that if I'm doing this as an operation, there's a lot of background stuff that I'm doing to maximize the benefit that I'm getting relative to the people doing it. Just like, you know, like the company changing the name, where they had to, you know, they had all these T-shirts and all kinds of stuff they had come out with, and I got to see it beforehand, so I knew the name of the company, the new name of the company, weeks before virtually anyone else did.
But this is the thing with these things, there's a lot of preparation involved in these things, and sometimes, I don't know why, but for instance, when these Bataclan things happened, when these massacres, there were photos afterwards of the forensic team going in and checking out a shop that was being blown up, a kosher shop that is said to have been under attack and so on. The thing was, I recognized these photos, and it turned out that they were from the NAACP headquarters that were blown up in somewhere in the States just a few days before. And now I saw an Indian media where they were pumping out images from Berlin, but they were using images for Orlando, which was another of these stage events. Why they do it, I don't know. But also the victims keeps being recycled as well. You have Noah Posner, one of the boys, a small little boy of 6 years old that is said to have been killed in Sandy Hook. He suddenly was killed 2 years later on the day at the mass shooting in Peshawar in Pakistan. The exact same photo, everything there, BBC there presenting it with the photos in the background. And not one photo, it was all over the place in many different media, the same photo of the exact same boy. Why they do this, I don't know, but it's like in our face. It's almost like they're pushing our face down in it, and it's up for us to become aware of it, because otherwise
I think that's what they are doing. We're going to need to end just a moment here, but what they are doing is, I think it's their way of showing contempt for us. See, you know, we can use the same crisis actors over and over, and you're too stupid to see it, because there's a lot of that where the elites, they look at us as being cattle, and so they feel, look, you're so dumb that we can so blatantly con you, and you can't even figure out basic things like this. And it's also their way of justifying, you know, ever more tyranny and ever more evil against. It's like, you know, hey, these people, they're cattle. They're total morons. We can lie to their face and say the most ridiculous things and they'll believe it. We can give them official stories that even if they thought about for 15 seconds wouldn't make sense to them. It's like, you know, like just the Berlin attack. You know, why aren't there a bunch of crispy videos of it when you've got this big holiday party going on? You know, the thing is, we can lie to you in the most blatant ways. We can just, you know, really mess with you. And, you know, and you're so stupid you'll go along with it. Therefore, we're justified in whatever we do to you. I think that could be going on.
So I've heard from insiders that the people behind the New World Order, their way of interpret the law of karma is that if they inform us about what they're going to do and we do not react, that means that we consent to the action, and the bad karma comes
sure.
on our shoulders. So it's like they put these, it's almost like trailers. I look for them all the time, you know, because they put these little hints about upcoming terror events in these operations again and again and again. That's also why I've been able to predict several of them, because it's there. But it's up to us to see them and become aware of them and say, not okay, instead of just going along with it. Oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. And not doing anything about it. We need to wake
sure.
up big time.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. One of the reasons they do it, other than to confuse us, is just so that way they can say, see, we're, you know, these people, if they're so stupid, then we're justified in doing whatever we want with them. Okay, are there any closing thoughts that you want to leave us with?
I would very much like to say that I believe that this is the year where we're going to come to the tipping point, turn this whole thing around. And I think it's extremely important how we deal with it, that we don't approach this problem with violence, hatred, revenge in our minds, but transcend this whole thing so that we can help and create a beautiful world on the other side when this stops. So if it would be okay with you, I would very much like to end with a prayer. Not that I'm a religious
sure.
person, but the prayer goes like this. It's my Raja yoga teacher, Nalini Chelaram's, and it goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who heard us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light. The thing is, we all need to heal. They need to heal as well, because otherwise this madness will just continue. So the way forward is this, I think.
I hope so. I do believe that you are right. With that, I think we're gonna end the show. Thank you very much, Ole. I really enjoyed this. I hope everyone got a lot out of it. Okay, with that, this is Roger North signing off for True North. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.